From the Sky News Centre at 6. There have been dramatic scenes in court today as a man charged with murdering three prostitutes in Bradford appeared for the first time. Stephen Griffiths, a criminology student aged 40, attended the city's magistrates before appearing before the Crown Court. Our reporter Tom Parmenter says the magistrates' room was packed this morning.
When the hush descended as he made his way into the dock, the court of the clerk asked him what his name was. He replied, "The Crossbow Cannibal." There was gasps in the public gallery at that moment. He was then asked for his address. He said, "Here, I guess."
A paedophile postman who targeted children he met on his rounds has pleaded guilty to 27 child sex offences. Michael Williams from Penryn in Cornwall used social networking sites to pursue hundreds of youngsters. David Cameron set out his vision for the economy, insisting the UK can turn its fortunes around. In his first major speech since becoming Prime Minister, he's vowed to cut the deficit while encouraging economic growth. And he says change is coming.
Can we go from an economy built on debt and borrowing to one that's built on saving and investment? Can we reopen Britain for business? Now, my answer to all of these questions is an unequivocal, unashamed yes.
John Prescott is moving into the House of Lords. The former Deputy Prime Minister is one of 50 senior figures named in the honours list. Ex-Tory leader Michael Howard and children's TV presenter Floella Benjamin will also become peers. Tennis, Andy Murray has beaten Marcos Baghdatis for the very first time in his career. The win sees the British number one safely through to the fourth round of the French Open. And in football, Jose Mourinho will be introduced to fans as Real Madrid's new manager on Monday lunchtime. The Spanish giants have agreed a compensation package with Inter Milan so they can appoint the former Chelsea boss. That's the latest. I'm Sean Alan Moy.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
You think you have a problem with cocaine or other drugs? Cocaine Anonymous can help. Visit our website www.cauk.org.uk. We're here and we're free. Call 0800 612 0225.
Arnold Services. Don't miss the opportunity. If you are employed and do extra hours work, bank shifts or overtime, including a second job, you are likely to have overpaid taxes. If you don't fall into any of these categories, you are still likely to have overpaid taxes based on your job expenses. We act as tax agents and can claim back £800 to £1,100 and up to £3,000 if you have never claimed before. Telephone 0845 544 0834. Visit marnor.net. MARNOR. Email admin@marnor.net.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Welcome back to Friday Drive Time. In a minute, author of the Police Federation's Tetra report, Barry Trower, will be on the line to discuss the safety or otherwise of mobile phone and wireless networks. That's electrosmog to you and I. And delayed from last week, we'll hear a lucid Michael Jackson speaking about music industry executive Tommy Mottola in 2004, around the same time as Rupert Murdoch's Sun newspaper tapes from a few weeks ago, which make Michael sound like a drugged up lunatic. But before all that, top secret Bilderberg meeting starts next weekend, where kings and queens of Europe meet up with media bosses, NATO, oil barons, war criminal Henry Kissinger, and the heads of the banks who control most of the money in the Western world. And it all takes place in secret. Now, Martin Summers is joining us, our old Labour Oxford economist and general sort of pundit. Martin, do you think the Bilderberg is something which we really should be concerned about and should we be reporting on? This is, after all, it's a private meeting.
Yes, and of course, what's happened in recent years is that the Bilderberg conference, as it's called, has become not open to the public, but just visible. At one stage, these meetings used to take place, as you know, in complete secrecy, and there was a denial that the meetings were even taking place. So you had all of the top movers and shakers, basically the financial people plus their political puppets, but it was all taking place in secret. Now the meetings still take place, but they basically are found out. I mean, you have to chase around and find them out. We've found out that it's in Spain, I believe. They don't publicise that. It takes investigative journalism to uncover it. But increasingly, what this does is it shows people what the real power structure is. These people meet in private to stitch it all up in secret. That's what they do.
Now, what's the significance of the meeting taking place near Barcelona in Spain this year?
Well, I mean, the significance of where it is hard to discern.
Just to give you a hint, it was Greece last year.
Yes, well, you could suggest that it's because of the fragility of the Spanish economy. I suggest they're trying to find places which are out of the way and difficult for investigative journalists to get to. This is what they've been doing with G8 meetings as well. They put them on an island in the middle of nowhere because when they hold them in big cities, people demonstrate. I suspect that it's more to do with security than anything else. But I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody explains anything to us. These meetings take place, but what goes on, nobody tells us.
Is it really possible, though, for just a handful of people, there's about 120 go along to these meetings, could actually steal a march on the democratic process, the whole democratic system?
It's which 120 people go. I mean, I see Bilderberg, as I've said before, like a horse fair, where the financial people, you know, the real movers and shakers, buy and sell the politicians. They have a look at their fetlocks, they have a look at their teeth, and decide which ones they want to buy. And politicians who are on the up, like Bill Clinton or Tony Blair or Mr. Cameron, they get invited in order for these for the real movers and shakers to have a look at them and to get them on side for what they want.
Well,
them
the
to
former
do.
Labour leader John Smith went along to Bilderberg.
Yes, and that would be part of his being vetted as being acceptable or unacceptable.
Well, that was in 1992,
yeah.
And apparently he came out of the meeting saying these guys have got it all wrong, and actually he told the Bilderbergers that he actually wanted to bring one of his economic advisers along to tell them about economics in 1993, but unfortunately
John Smith not famously, he did make a speech to the Socialist International in Geneva about 2 weeks before he died. This is reported in my book, Market Failure. For those who made Martin Summers, Market Failure, you can find it on Amazon, I'm sure. But in that book,
A few tatty copies left.
But he made a speech to the Socialist International in Geneva 2 weeks before he died, saying we've got to abolish the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Now, I think those kind of ideas will not have gone down well at Bilderberg. So this suggests, Tony, by the way, that not everybody who goes to Bilderberg is an insider. It's a way of vetting who is and who isn't acceptable. So they'll invite people who are borderline to check them out.
Well, the secretariat for the conference is based in Leiden in Holland, and I know over the years that they release the most bizarre press release I've ever seen in my life, which says confidential at the top. You know, normally press releases are there to be transmitted, but these go out to the news wires, the wire services like Associated Press, Reuters and people like that. The other thing about this year's meeting is that Charlie Skelton from The Guardian is actually organising a Facebook campaign, and he's going over there. He may even already be there because this is all beginning to happen next weekend. And if anyone's interested in following that, there's a Facebook group called Bilderberg, A Spanish Idyll, and that's where Charlie's posting various little bit snippets of information because he's doing his best to get some publicity. Of course, it's very difficult because they employ secret services, even though it's a private meeting, you know, it will be the Spanish Secret Service that does all the security, to keep as many people and reporters as well away as possible. The other thing is I got a call from Russia Today this morning to say that actually they are sending a camera crew over to cover the entire conference starting probably the beginning of next week and the run-up to it and after it as well. So at least there is a channel where you can watch some of this conference.
Yes, and
on.
And let's plug your past efforts. It's your website, Bilderberg.org, which has helped to force open the door on all of this. I think as the Bilderberg conference becomes more visible, they're likely to retreat further into the woodwork and find even more secret venues to decide what they want to do without being properly accountable.
But it's all right because it's a private meeting and it's only Henry Kissinger that runs it.
Ah, but if it's a private meeting, then why are all these politicians there that are elected politicians without telling the rest of the people why they're there? That's the problem.
Okay, so that's the Bilderberg conference taking place in Sitges, Sitges in Spain, next weekend. It starts, I think, on the Thursday afternoon. Kenneth Clark, who's the main Bilderberg representative for Britain, will probably be there if he's not too busy being Lord Chancellor on the Thursday evening. And I guess we'll be reporting on it next week too. Okay, so we'll be talking about mobile phones in a moment, but first let's have some appropriate music. John Barry, you only live twice. The safety or otherwise of mobile phones and wireless networks, that electro-smog to you and I, is a bit of a nightmare, with contrary evidence in the news. Most people don't know whether they're safe or not. Barry Trower has published research on microwave absorption and had a military career as a scientist in the Royal Navy working on radar. He's also the author of a recent report commissioned by the police's trade union, the Police Federation, into their Tetra communication system, which uses microwaves, and he joins us now from his home in Devon. Hello, Barry, and
hello,
welcome to Drive Time. Now, Barry, what were you doing in the Navy?
Well, I trained at the government's microwave warfare establishment, which used or studied all forms of microwave technology, putting it very simply.
Okay, so, you know, what is microwave warfare? Can you explain?
There are several different aspects here. You have everything from radar, which uses microwaves, to communication systems, which uses microwaves. And going back slightly earlier, you have the stealth microwave weapons, which came into being during the Cold War. And it was initially written up when the Russians irradiated the US embassy in Moscow with very low level microwaves to cause cancers and illnesses, as I say, during the Cold War, and they were then realized that they were the perfect stealth weapon to use on dissidents or people you didn't want to cause cancer or neurological illnesses.
Now, don't you think maybe you've got into a little bit of a mindset here of seeing microwaves in their military role, not in the, a peaceful, benign role?
Well, you could say that, but you see, the problem I have is that when you read the research where microwaves were used in the stealth warfare mode, and still are today, there is no difference between those microwaves and the microwaves now coming out of the cell towers or sitting on blocks of flats or in residential areas. The microwaves don't change, and in fact, the powers are even less when they're used in warfare. And this was my question when I wrote the first of my reports for the Police Federation, was how can something that is used as a stealth weapon suddenly become safe as a domestic instrument?
Anyway, you did this report into the police's Tetra communication system. What is Tetra?
Well, Tetra, it's just really a mobile phone system for the police. And in fact, I've done two major reports. The first in 2000, and the second, after peer review, was published in January this year. It's really just a mobile phone system for the police, but Tetra differs insofar as the pulse or modulation frequency, in other words, the extra waves per second, which are incorporated in the system. They are known in the microwave warfare industry as particularly dangerous, and they are well documented. It's not me just sitting here hoping to be famous. They're well documented as being able to cause confusion and misjudgment within the natural brain waves of the body.
Now, the obvious question, Barry, is how on earth could these, if what you're saying is true, be regulated and allowed to be used in general public use?
Well, the simple answer, sir, is that they were not regulated. Tetra was brought out totally untested, and it was really rolled out and forced onto the police force. In fact, I didn't even want to write these reports. I was contacted by one of the chief officers of the Federation and asked to look into it. He sent me all the bump after checking me out, or having me checked out. I wrote the report and said, you know, whatever happens, you cannot use this because it interferes with the what are known as the beta rhythm or the beta waves, natural brain waves of the brain. And I said, you know, it can cause unpredictable behaviour, among other things. And I just finished my report there and sent it in. But it wasn't tested, and it was rolled out. And I can give you an opinion, my opinion, which stops any legal arguments here. I think it was rolled out because it was realized that there were lots of international potential buyers, and there was a lot of money involved here. And at the police conference, which I attended, the Home Office doctor stood up and said, to all of the unions there, the union officers, if you don't like it, you have the choice of resigning. And that was really, I won't mention her on air, her name, although it's in my report. She stood up and said, you know, if you don't like it, you can resign. And then the new chair of the Federation, the lady, stood up and said, nothing is going to stop this. So the police really had no way of, that their union signed the agreement, and the police officers had nowhere to go, and they still have nowhere to go.
Now, also joined by BCFM presenter Steve Satan. Hi, Steve.
How are you doing?
What's your view, Steve, about the dangers or otherwise of these mobile phones, particularly? We'll be talking about wireless networks as well later.
Yeah, and I wouldn't go so far to say that there's absolutely no danger at all, but I think the dangers are hugely overplayed. I think there's an awful lot of scaremongering. Actually, what prompted me to come on the programme last... this time around was the last time we had a guest on. I think it was Sarah
Wright.
Yeah, and you know, I thought she was talking a load of rubbish, really. And as you know, I picked up on a large number of points that she made. Let me ask Barry. Actually, I've got one question for you, Barry. You suggest that you know, things such as Tetra and wireless are all very dangerous and so on, and presumably. The people who are implementing these systems, the Tetra bosses or the politicians and the same applies to mobile phones, the bosses of the mobile phone companies, they're subjecting themselves to this dangerous radiation. So why would they be on a sort of suicide mission?
I wonder whether they've actually looked at the research. If I could just mention a few. In 1971, the U.S. Naval Medical Research Institute, which were the world leaders at that particular time, they referenced 2,300 research papers involving low-level microwaves and all of the illnesses which you can get from absorption of the low-level microwaves. This was followed up in the year 2000, if which you will be familiar with the ECLOG study, which was from the mobile industry itself, looked into its own product. And its conclusion, which I have here, it actually says that low-level microwaves can cause cancer initiation and cancer promotion and DNA damage.
Okay.
Following that, you have the industry themselves put another huge study into progress with Dr. George Carlo, and he came up with the same conclusion. So most of the major studies, in fact, the major studies from the mobile industry have all shown that they can cause cancer and DNA damage. Now, with your question, why are the leaders subjecting themselves to suicide missions? Well, I don't know that the leaders actually have transmitters in their front gardens or back gardens or on the roofs of the houses where they live. And I don't know that they give their pregnant ladies or pregnant wives mobile phones to use, and I don't know that they give their children mobile phones to use.
I think we can say with some confidence that all politicians use mobile phones, can't we?
But how many politicians have read 2,300 research papers?
Anyway, now back in November last year, we broadcast an hour-long and fascinating, I thought, interview with Sarah Wright, which sparked Steve to come on tonight. And it was from a North London-based campaign, Masked Sanity. You can hear the whole show, if you want, on the web at thisweek.org.uk. But let's have a little listen to a short extract from that show now.
Is there any one group of society that gets affected more by electromagnetic radiation?
Well, in terms of sensitivity, some people immediately get effects such as headaches or dizziness. It's a minority, about 5 to 10% of people, and these do tend to be women and children more than men, which we're not quite sure why. But those are typical symptoms that people might experience. In terms of worse effects like autoimmune diseases or cancers, children are more susceptible, yes, because they're certainly more susceptible to use of a mobile phone because their skulls are thinner, and there are studies showing that the radiation can penetrate right through the skull of a child, a five-year-old, whereas half the skull for a 10-year-old as opposed to an adult. And again, because their cells are dividing quicker, there's more that can go wrong as they're growing. So, obviously, we're very concerned about children. In fact, we've set up a new charity called WiredChild.org, specifically looking at protecting children. And one of the biggest worries is they're putting wireless internet into all our schools in the UK. Well, in fact, all over the world. 70% of our schools have Wi-Fi. And in the case of primary schools, they're putting the transmitters, the routers, inside every classroom. And they're transmitting all day long. The intensity will be the same as though there were a phone mast right outside. Children are getting sick, constant flus. You know, there's one flu after another. No one is doing anything except two teachers' unions have spoken out, the Association of Teachers and Lecturers and Voice, both calling for a ban on Wi-Fi in schools. It's been pulled out of Paris libraries after librarians went on strike because they got migraines when it was put in. There's a town in France where the mayor is removing all Wi-Fi from schools. There's a university in Canada where it's never had it because the president was a biologist and reviewed the evidence first. And the Sorbonne has announced a few weeks ago that they're to remove Wi-Fi now as well.
That was Sarah Wright from the campaign group Masked Sanity speaking on this programme back in November last year. Now, Steve, what did you make of that?
Well, I mean, this is the sort of madness we're dealing with, really, the sort of paranoia about Wi-Fi. And I'll give you an example of a neighbour of mine. You know, she's convinced that the Wi-Fi is making her ill. And I'm convinced it's not, and she's wasted money on one of these silly little Wi-Fi detectors. Okay, the important point about Wi-Fi is that it's extremely low power. And it is actually nothing new. Although specifically Wi-Fi is that sort of radiation, isn't it? We've been exposed to that sort of radiation in the form of TV transmissions for more than 50 years now. Ultra-high frequency microwave pulse radiations from very, very powerful transmitters, which are, you know, millions of times more powerful than Wi-Fi signals. Let me give you an example. I did some calculations. The sort of dose you get from Wi-Fi, a Wi-Fi point 5 meters away from you, is the same as the dose that the entire population of London has been receiving from the Crystal Palace transmitter for the last 50 years. Now, you know, I'm pretty confident that the whole of the London population hasn't been wiped out by cancer. And I think that is pretty powerful empirical evidence that that sort of level of radiation is pretty safe.
So how do you answer that, Barry? Because, that's a pretty damning, isn't it? If there is an equivalence between these Wi-Fi networks and the, as Steve said, and the old TV signals?
Well, not really, because the old radio and TV signals use radio waves. Wi-Fi uses microwaves. We're in a different wave band here. And microwaves react very, very differently in our water-based bodies than do radio and TV signals.
Oh, sorry, Barry, that is rubbish, isn't it? Both Wi-Fi and TV transmissions fall in the microwave band, don't they?
What do you have for your TV frequencies?
Anything in the range of 400 to 800 megahertz.
Okay. What is the distance of the transmitter from the people?
Well, it varies. Anything from a couple of yards up to about 10 miles.
Okay. Now, the work of Debbie Ackland, are you familiar with that?
Is that the Australian study?
No, Debbie Ackland. No, she's in this country. Dr. Debbie Ackland published a research paper around the transmitters you've mentioned, and she actually drew the... You could calculate the cancers and the leukemias going up towards the transmitters, with the increase of the cancers and the leukemias going up towards the transmitters.
Okay.
So
well,
TV and radio transmitters are not immune from this, and that was also published by Dr. Goldsmith as well, before Debbie Ackland. He actually wrote a paper calling it the end of the age of innocence. So TV transmitters and radio transmitters of that frequency are certainly not immune.
The one report I've read, which was one that Sarah Wright recommended to me, was this Australian study, which found a very slight correlation between distance to a TV transmitter and cancer clusters.
But Dr. Debbie Ackland, she looked at the main transmitters, and you could plot an increase of the cancers and leukemias as you approach the transmitter. The industry's own research into microwaves and the government's own research into microwaves all show that they suppress the immune system, and I fail to see how a microwave transmitter can act differently than any other microwave transmitter that has already been studied by governments and industry and shown to cause cancer.
Well, I'm inclined to agree, but I think, as I said, there isn't widespread cancer near TV transmitters, is there? There might be a slight increase, but it's not an epidemic, and the levels near TV transmitters are millions of times higher than the sort of radiation you're going to get from Wi-Fi.
Not necessarily, sir. You see, I mean, most Wi-Fi... are we talking Wi-Fi in schools or Wi-Fi in the house?
Well, I'm talking about the standard Wi-Fi router that... I mean, it's all pretty standard, isn't it? If you have a Wi-Fi setup, it's limited to a tenth of a watt, which is, microscopic compared to the 4 million that come out of Crystal Palace. And that's the sort of Wi-Fi I'm talking about.
But I mean, Crystal Palace was one of the studies which was done in Debbie Eklund's report and did show increased cancers.
Okay, so anyway, we have been out on the streets this week, and Marina Morris has been out asking you whether you feel safe with mobile phones, and just trying to get your comments on mobile phone and wireless safety.
Are mobile phones safe for you and children?
Yes, so I used to work in the mobile phone industry, and all the science seems to point so far that they're safe. There was the thought of danger of microwaves and stuff close to the ears and all the rest of it and that sort of thing, but it seems like it was more to do with a worry about what might happen rather than what actually does happen. So I don't know. I mean, you can't say. Do a 100-year study and maybe we'll know, but currently it doesn't look like there's any reason why anybody should. If there's no evidence for adults, I don't know if there's separate things for children, to be honest with you, but I think it's more to do with you get into an issues about societal damage and questions like that. So is it good to be constantly staring at something? I don't know.
I don't have much of an opinion about that. When they're not safe, it's when people walk along the street on them and walk into things and don't notice the traffic. I think it's a nuisance for children, and I think children should be allowed to be somewhere where their parents don't know where they are, instead of at the beck and call of a mobile phone all the time. Probably not, but everybody uses them anyway. I've heard somewhere that if you put an egg in between two mobile phones, it cooks the egg, so what it must do to your brain can't be very healthy at all. In fact, I've noticed when I've been on the mobile phone for a bit too long, it actually hurts, so I swap sides. So probably they're not, they're not very healthy for you. I don't really know. I mean, mobile phones weren't invented when I was a child, so I can't really imagine a child with a mobile phone or what a child would need a mobile phone for, besides some sort of fashion thing. I suppose they run off and get lost, but then, I don't know. I suppose every now and again, that happens with children.
Yeah, fine. I always use mine, love it. Use it all the time, I use the text, use it to call, and I've got, no worries. A couple, I don't know, probably an hour a day. But I text a lot. but using it to call, yeah, probably an hour. To be honest, I'm no expert. I'm no doctor. I ain't got a clue. What do you mean?
What, using mobile around children? Yeah, I've just done the phone. So,
it completes my life.
Wi-Fi safe?
Oh, no, I don't worry about that stuff. No, if I think about that, I wouldn't do anything in life. I'd be, it'll just stifle me, wouldn't it?
It's the same problem. I don't have enough knowledge about it to know. So, unless I know something, I don't tend to have an opinion. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'd need to see the research.
Now, that's an interesting subject, because I've heard that it disrupts the bees. You know how bees, they work on the particular energies of this world to be able to get back to their hives. And I've heard that it might be wireless, Wi-Fi or something like that, that actually stops the bees from being able to remember where their hive is. Then they cannot get back with the pollen that they've connected. And we may think that this is, so what if bees die? But as I think it was it Einstein that said we've got 4 years to live as a human race once the bees have gone, which means that if our crops, which we survive on, are not pollinated and can't produce any fruit or any crops, then basically we're all going to starve unless we come up with some other plan. So yes, it's a serious problem.
Are you planning to change behavior if we'll publish evidence of the risk of using mobile phones?
I'd like to see the research. I mean, I'm open-minded. I believe it's possible it isn't, and it's possible it is. I haven't seen the research myself, so I'd need to see it and decide. Yes, because if it turns out to be damaging, I'm not using it anyway, so it's very easy for me.
Yeah, if there's something else that I can do, then I would definitely be willing. Certainly me, as an individual, I would be willing to do something about it. I would be willing to, I hardly use it that much anyway, but it's, I suppose it's difficult with jobs and things to not have your mobile on you, because people always want to get hold of you, they want to contact you. I think we'd have to rethink the way that we live our lives. I think that it could be beneficial, actually, to people. We're always rushing around, aren't we? I think it would be better for us and better for our environment if we actually, came up with another solution or health. I think health is the most important, really, because there won't be any easy, quick way of doing anything if we're not well and fit to be able to live our lives. We won't be able to go to work if we're suffering with some sort of cancer, or we won't be able to do the things that we do in our lives until we think about what we're doing with our health, think about what we're doing to this planet.
No, because I don't think one study is that conclusive.
That one of the main points being made in Marina's vox pop there, Steve, is the fact that we can't afford to take risks with this, surely. A bit like the ash cloud. Well, we shouldn't be taking risks if we're really not entirely clear that this is safe.
Well, OK, firstly, there is the evidence I presented regard to TV transmitters that does give us evidence that actually it is pretty safe and the risks are pretty low, not absolutely zero.
They are a different frequency.
Well, I don't think that's particularly significant. But the other thing about mobile phones, and this is a really crucial point as well, when people worry about mobile phones or Wi-Fi, and I'm sure Barry would agree with me on this, the sort of dose you get is proportional to the power of the transmitter and inversely proportional to the square of the distance.
Oh gosh.
Power divided by distance squared. Now you can work it out yourself.
What does that mean? Does it mean that it drops off very quickly as you get away from the transmitter?
Okay. And what that means is that the dose you get from using a mobile phone right next to your head can be millions of times greater than the dose you would get from the TV mast or the mobile phone mast that you're all paranoid about at the end of your street. And so, just one conversation. Most people wouldn't worry, even if they were a bit paranoid, they wouldn't worry about having one conversation on the phone. And yet, that would be more than you'd get in probably a lifetime of living near to a mobile phone mast.
So, Barry, what are your thoughts about what you heard on the Vox Pops there?
Okay, there are a couple of issues that came up here. Now, I mean, the gentleman with you is probably aware of the big Interphone study, which has just been published. Now, I'm referring to the editor of the International Journal of Epidemiological Studies here. And he has been through the Interphone study, and he said that the heavy users, those who used phones for a half an hour a day, were 40% more, and I'm quoting his words here, 40% more likely to develop a brain tumour. Now, when we look at the Interphone study, it looked at people 30 years or over. In other words, those with more dense skulls. Now, if a half an hour a day, according to the editor here of the Epidemiological Journal, if those who 30 years or over use a phone for half an hour a day are 40% more likely to develop a brain tumour, what about the 13-year-olds who are using it for half an hour a day with soft skulls? There's your first question. The second is the gentleman there is talking about low-level radiation versus high-level radiation. In other words, he's saying if you're a certain distance from a transmitter, it doesn't compare to the phone against your ear. Now, we've known since the 50s that, in fact, with all, and the gentleman will agree with me here, I suspect, is that all levels of electromagnetic radiation are accumulative. It's rather like sunbathing on a cloudy day. It's only a matter of time. So, and the problem is, if you hold a mobile phone to your head, the antioxidants in the body, vitamins A, C, E, and so on, they are activated because they realize the body is being invaded, in this case by microwaves. But when you are near a transmitter or some distance, the waves are below the threshold which would trigger the antioxidants. And the microwaves come in, they disrupt the cell membranes, which then you have the mechanism that goes through to the nucleus. And because it's below the thresholds, the body doesn't act until the damage is done. So it actually comes in below the radar, so to speak. So, in fact, four professors anyway, I won't run through the names, they have all shown that a long, continuous low level, particularly when you're sleeping, can be more dangerous than a short, high dose.
So you're making the rather bizarre claim that actually lower levels of radiation are more harmful than high ones?
In the long term, certainly.
Okay, well, I find that hard to swallow. Also, I would dispute your interpretation about the 40% increase in risk. I don't know the details to hand to come back to you, but I believe that's a misinterpretation of the data. The Interphone study pretty much gave a very low level of risk related with mobile phones.
That was from the industry, sir, and from the government spokespersons. I'm referring to the editor of the Epidemiological Journal.
Again, yeah. If I had enough time, I could find the counter argument.
Let's also just to emphasise here that the there are actually lots and lots of these mobile phone masts. Apparently now 50,000 scattered across the United Kingdom, and of course many of them, Steve, are just literally on the top floor of blocks of council flats and offices, which are actually very, very close to where people are working, sleeping, and living.
Indeed, but this is one of the things that actually I picked up on when you had Sarah on last time, that the number of masts is actually a bit of a red herring. What matters is the sort of level of radiation, and compared to TV masts, for instance, TV masts are much, much, much more powerful than radio masts. Hence, there are very fewer of them. But the sort of, if you want to characterise it as electrosmog or harmless radio waves, as I prefer to see it, the number is a bit of a red herring. Yeah, sure, some of them are on top of tower blocks. Some people live very, very close to high-power TV transmitters. You know, that we've got Ilchester Crescent, which is one of the major Bristol transmitters, is a residential crescent, and I'm not aware of any illness and cancer in that part of Bristol.
Barry, would you be nervous living, on the top floor of a block of flats with these an array of masts on the roof?
There are two points here. The first is research has been done. It was published by a university in India that showed that people who had, in blocks of flats, people who had transmitters on the roofs did become more ill than the people in similar blocks of flats without transmitters on the roofs. And the second concerning children, which is if you, I don't have a computer, but I know if you go onto the internet and you download my paper, my address to the Welsh Assembly, a survey was done around the schools in France and Spain, and they found 130 schools with leukemia clusters that had transmitters in the playgrounds or near the playgrounds. And when I addressed, gave my address at the Welsh Assembly, in this country, and again France and Spain, within just a few years, we found another 47. So we were up to 200 leukemia clusters in and around schools that had transmitters placed near them. Now, that has to be more than a coincidence, surely.
Now, we're also joined in the studio by Martin Summers, our resident pundit and Old Labour Oxford economist. Martin, do you want to try and throw some light on what we've been hearing so far?
Can you hear me properly, first of all? Yeah, because we had problems with this mic a minute ago. Well, the obvious thing that comes to my mind, Barry, listening to you, is that you began your career in the public sector, working for the military, and looking at the harmful effects, potential effects of microwaves. And I remember friends of mine who were protesters at Greenham Common feeling that they were being bombarded with microwaves and telling stories about being sick and so on. Now, you obviously come from that kind of background, and I think that's quite interesting because, of course, you're not actually an industry person. You're a public sector person. And so that you come to this with a rather different perspective from those who've come up through the industry. Picking up on Steve's point about why would those in charge of the industry or the politicians or whatever subject themselves to these dangers if they were perceived to be dangerous, I think if we look back in history, there's plenty of examples of dangerous things which have been agreed because they made money, which were subsequently shown to be very dangerous. And I'm thinking of things like smoking. Many top executives in cigarette companies were smokers, and of course they knew very well that they were harming themselves, but they were making more money out of selling cigarettes than they were worried about whether they were harming themselves.
But they did have the option to give up, though, didn't they? That's the point. And the boss of Orange doesn't have the option to screen off these dangerous radio waves.
But don't forget that the people who pushed asbestos for many years perhaps didn't even know that asbestos was dangerous, but hundreds of thousands of people are now likely to die from asbestos poisoning or from cancers caused by asbestos. I mean, a friend of mine who was a university lecturer in the 60s and 70s died recently of asbestos poisoning because he used to work in polytechnics which were all full of asbestos. Now, presumably, somebody somewhere knew something about that or didn't want to know because they were making enough money. Another scientific danger which has been alerted to me or I've picked up on is this idea that PCBs in plastics are actually estrogen mimickers and are actually making the sperm count drop. Now, a society gets path dependent on certain things. Industries push things that they want to push, whether it's smoking, asbestos or plastic, and then it later turns out that this is extremely dangerous. And of course it's in the industry's interest to deny this, to avoid compensation claims, what have you. The wealthy classes, if you like, the people who push all of this, they won't be completely immune from the consequences of what they do, but by and large the system makes them feel as if they are immune. So I think the real problem we've got here is that money is... I don't really know enough about this to have a strong opinion either way. I'm listening with great interest to the kind of duel that you've been having. What I know as an economist is that often things are done which are not in the public interest because vested interests have got a money-making opportunity, and that will probably be behind why the Tetra has been pushed so heavily on the police. I think we've got to have independent regulation of the private sector. It can't be allowed to just make up its own rules. And, of course, unfortunately, we see the consequence of the private sector making up its own rules in the Gulf of Mexico now. And it's quite clear that there's no regulation of what the oil companies are supposed to be doing. That's what everybody's now saying. They were basically allowed to get on with doing whatever they wanted because they were the experts and nobody could decide what was right and what was wrong. We need strong, independent regulatory bodies to make sure. The ordinary person really depends on that because they can't
look at all the research. One of the Vox Pop people was saying, I want to see the research. Well, there's an awful lot of research, as you've been saying, Barry, and not everybody can read it all. We really do depend on the government, if you like, to make sure that stuff is safe before it's put into circulation, and often it isn't.
Well, let's, without being paranoid, let's look at the precautionary principle for a minute. Barry, you know, if people are nervous about mobile phones or wireless, what can they actually do?
Well, the simple answer is I'm not against mobile phones. I don't have one, but if I did have one, I would keep it off, and I would only use it, as the government advise, for our children. The government advise our children to use a mobile phone in an emergency. And to me, if a child used a mobile phone once a year, I would say, well, you must have a pretty rough life, because I grew up sort of post-war, and I never had a life and death emergency once a year. So I would say, if you have it, keep it off, and use it in a real emergency. If your wife breaks down, you know, in the middle of the motorway, or middle of a country lane, or your child is being followed, then use it. But according to the industry's own research, they are not domestic instruments, and we are not programmed to be bombarded with microwaves.
Do other countries in Europe have more strict regimes? Because I think Sarah Wright was saying that the Swiss regime is incredible. Like, you're hardly allowed to have any microwaves in Switzerland.
There are countries which ban children under 16 using them. There are now countries which recognise electrosensitivity, which is best described, I would think, of like a food poisoning, where particular people, and we don't know why, are very susceptible to microwave irradiation. And it varies from country to country, from 3% of the population, which would be 2 million in this country, 1.8 million, to the Nobel Prize-winning Irish Doctors Association, who think it may be as high as 15%. So that there are countries that are having areas microwave-free for people who are electrosensitive. And I do know, because I've just come back from Africa, which was quite an enlightening trip on bees, which you mentioned earlier, and one country in Africa has actually banned all future telecommunications masts until further notice.
Can I pick up on your point about the precautionary principle there?
Of course, yeah.
Because the idea is that, you know, we shouldn't really go for this technology until we've proved it's safe long term. The thing is, you can't prove it's safe long term until and unless you use it. The sort of real life experiment is the only sort of test that will show whether it's safe or not.
May I disagree, sir?
Well, you can disagree, yeah.
and I'll tell you why. Two reasons here, and I'm not being disrespectful, sir. The first is, you can actually prove something safe. Drug companies, they run 10-year trials with volunteers. And they run 10-year trials, and they don't always get it right.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. They're actually doing 10-year trials on people. They're testing these drugs on people.
Okay, exactly. Now, you know, we could have a volunteer force of people willing to use mobile phones, and then we could study, or we could look at their blood, we could look at cell changes in the brains. But you see, mobile phones were put out totally untested, totally untried, and given to children who have picked them up, you know, like nobody's business. So what we are now have is a worldwide population of children using something which was untried, untested, and they're using them far more than the military do, and the military have got their own figures for brain cancers and leukemias. So this is really a drug trial worldwide on children, and I'm sure you will agree with me, sir, here. You know, a child's immune system isn't fully developed until the child is 18, and the industry's own research shows that the first effect of microwaves is suppression of the immune system. And the other thing is the child's nervous system, its signaling pathways, which are made of protein, isn't developed until the child is 22, and microwaves in a laboratory have been shown to affect protein synthesis, and there's no argument there. So what we're doing is we are giving our children something that can affect their undeveloped immune systems, undeveloped protein signaling pathways, and they are a trial, and I would like to think beyond belief that I was wrong, that my military training and my knowledge of this going back to the 60s says that we are going to have some horrific results, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years.
Now, I know one of the things that worries me is that the government has become rather massively dependent on the licences which are given out to the mobile phone companies. But, Barry, I wanted to pick you up on what you were saying about the bees there.
Yes, sir.
Because we're hearing again and again that one of the reasons that the bee population is really plummeting in Britain is that the mobile phone networks and wireless networks actually somehow disrupt the bees' navigation system.
Oh yes, I know. Yeah.
Can you explain how that happens, and if there is actually any proof for this?
Oh, absolutely, sir. Absolutely. And I'm sure the gentleman with you will not disagree with me when I say probably the most prestigious investigative science journal in the world is Nature. Nothing gets in Nature unless it is, you know, I think you've got to be brilliant to get anything in Nature.
I'm certainly agreed that it's highly respected. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything in it is right.
Okay. They published an article. There are two separate areas here. They published an article which showed that the entire microwave band system can affect the navigational system, the solar navigational system of birds, the cryptochrome system of birds, which is in fact the same system that bees and other flying insects use. And they showed that this system could cause the animal to get lost. So we've got one system there which has been published in Nature. The other method is that we know that the even low-level electro-smog is 640 times more powerful than the Earth's geomagnetic field that the bees generally use for their navigation. They have ferromagnetic materials in their heads, abdomens, and thoraxes.
But Barry, doesn't that mean that their system gets completely swamped by these signals?
Well, what I'm saying is, if you look at this, and I can back this up with a trip to Africa, basically what we're saying is the bees will get lost. They lose both their methods of orientation. And you also have, because, I mean, bee cells are really no different to owl cells or any other animal cells, come to think of it. You have a system which is suppressing the immune system. Now, the microwaves won't kill the bees, like AIDS doesn't kill people, but it suppresses the immune system. So you have a bee which is lost and its immune system suppressed. That leaves the door wide open for the mites or anything else which could come along. And I can back this up. Just a few weeks ago, I was in Africa. I was a guest there in Africa. And a gentleman took me to a field. And he stood me in the middle of the field and he said, "Barry, what can you hear?" And I said, "Well, apart from sort of a few things in the trees over there and something munching grass over there." And he said, "Normally here, we wouldn't be able to hear each other speak." He said, "There would be so many bees that just the noise would drown out our conversation." And he said, ever since that was put up, and there was a transmitter disguised as a tree, he said, ever since that was put up, I haven't seen a single bee, or in fact, a single ant.
So where was that in Africa, Barry?
Down in Botswana. I was a guest in Botswana, There are two big studies there, one on bees, where they're finding they're losing their bees where the transmitters go. And these people, with respect, you know, they do know their land.
Yes, but Barry, aren't these bees just being sensible? When they sense that there's a bit too many microwaves around, they're going to go and nest somewhere else.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that means that they're just moving. It doesn't mean that they're getting rid of them completely.
Well, I mean, if you're losing the bees from transmitters, what does it matter what the cause is?
Now, anyway, Steve, can I just ask you to sum up with some of your thoughts about, you know, for anybody out there who can sort of ameliorate their fears and say, well, actually, you don't need to be worried about this at all.
Okay, the reason I don't... Well, I'm an electronic engineer. I understand these things, you know, and I live with Wi-Fi sitting on in my living room just a few feet from me. I have my mobile phone in my pocket switched on, and I don't believe it's going to make me infertile. And I think there's a lot of paranoia about mobile phone masts. And Barry suggested we have a volunteer force of people to test mobile phones.
There was one lady on the Vox Pops.
They're called mobile phone customers. There's millions of them.
One of the ladies on the Vox Pops was saying that she actually feels her head heating up if she's got the mobile phone. Do you ever have that?
No.
Oh, well, I can say I do, but anyway.
Oh, and isn't interesting, and one more thing as well, that when you use your mobile phone, it adjusts the amount of power it's putting out, depending on how much power it needs to get to the nearest transmitting or receiving mast. Now, if you have a mast at the end of your street, your mobile phone needs less power to reach that mast. So, in fact, if you have a mobile phone mast near you, it's actually in your interest because it means you'll get less radiation when you use your mobile phone.
And our guest, Barry Trower, author of the Police Federation's Tetra report into their particular microwave phones. Barry, what could you just sum up for me, please, in half a minute?
Well, I mean, I would just refer you back to the major studies carried out by the industry on its own product. And all of its major studies, all of the major studies carried out by the mobile phone industry into its own product, and I'll quote their own words here, is that they can cause cancer initiation and cancer promotion and damage DNA.
Barry Trower, thank you very much. And Steve Satan, now. That's all for this week. Coming up next is the Sky News at 7 o'clock. Do please join us at 5 on Friday Drive Time each week here on BCFM 93.2. And if you want the podcasts of this and previous shows, you can go to thisweek.org.uk. Thanks also to Marina Morris for the Vox Pop and our guest, Martin Summers.